Well, this is kind of corny, but I kind of typed up a small little thing I wanted to say. Before we really get started, I just want to thank you and the Horween family and your legacy for your dedication to making products for generations that's truly an American original. I've reviewed and worked with leather from all over the world, and there's nothing like Horween. My MBA professor said, in business, don't try to be the best, try to be different. But I would argue that Horween makes something different and is arguably the best as well. Horween's is just distinct in every category. So
you're a total sweetheart, Dale. I didn't know this.
Yeah, this is very nice. Thank you. That was very kind. Thank you.
Got Dale from Dale Leatherworks. I'm Phil Callis here with Nick Horween. Say hi to everybody, Nick, please.
Hello, everybody.
All right. I'm so excited to have Dale on the show today. I want you to go hard on Chrome XL here. There's some talk about Chrome XL being an overrated leather. I think in some ways it is, in some ways it isn't. I want to know what your opinion is. What do you think?
Okay, so I'm a little biased because Chrome XL was the first leather that I ever had that I was truly in love with. As soon as I opened up my Alden Indy 403s out of the box, just the aroma hit me. You know, it was unlike, it was almost an antique aroma. It was like opening up an ancient relic in a lot of respects. Like, it's the first time ever I felt a real shoe in my hand. So I'm very biased for Chrome XL. It was my first epiphany, my first aha into leather. I think the only reason why it's overrated is maybe because it's so easily available and anybody can get it, possibly. But no, I really think it's a great leather.
Let's go positives. And negatives.
First and foremost, to me, it's when it's fresh, brand new, the smell is unmatched. Not to mention that just amazing, living, oily texture that it has going on. Like, I could tell humans made it, you know. It's like when I compare it, for example, to my Thursday boots. No knock against Thursday, they're a great value. But their leather from Lafarge, it's got like this dead feeling to it. Like, it was just factory made. It's got that factory feel, you know. The factory feel feels cheap to me, whereas Horween Chrome XL, it has that handmade feel, that antique old world feel. Yeah.
Nick, let me bring you in the conversation.
Well, I want to go back up a little bit because I think that just to insert a little bit of my perspective on like the overrated, rated, underrated thing, I think that for people like the three of us who have a lot of experience just with a bunch of different products and a bunch of different colors and a bunch of different, you know, manufacturers, that gives us a pretty good range of what is possible and what's available. And I think that at this point, you know, the product has been around for a long time and it's been used in everything from like, you know, this is not a criticism, like lower cost, like boat shoes at Nordstrom's up to like, you know, bespoke stuff. So the range is so wide. So I think that depending on what product you end up with and where you land in that, and then how many of those different products you have to sort of compare against one another, that can really inform how you feel about the product in a lot of different ways. You know, and then it goes even further into that, you know, you've got individual people that are making the decisions to make those products too. So there's it's like anything with leather where it's a natural material and it's very experiential and it's based on fit and it's based on a lot of different things. So I think that when someone says, oh, it's overrated, I mean, I can understand why they would say that. Like, oh, I, you know, everybody, it's all everybody ever talks about. And like, not that's the case, but
I guess that's the question though, is like, why are they saying overrated? So let me tell you why I think it's overrated. It's like you said, it comes up a lot and people position it in sentences that it's the only choice. And that's the thing, is there's so many choices. Even the, like, Dale's flesh out, rough out, or wax flesh is also great. There's latigos, there's infinite amounts of tanges and finishing methods that I also like. And I think it's just so widely used.
Part of the reason why I'm sort of biased and also in favor of Chrome XL is because I had to educate my way into it, right? The first time I ever heard of Horween, for example, was I was researching NATO straps for my Panerai, not to get off on another tangent, but Nick, I was researching your website recently, and the picture of you on the web page, it was unmistakable. You were wearing a Panerai. Was that? Am I right?
Yeah, that was a much younger man in that photo. But yes, that's true. That photo is probably I've been talking about updating the website for a long time. That photo is probably it's more than 10 years old at this point. Like I've got some more miles on the vehicle at this point. But yeah, my wife gave me that Panerai as a wedding present. Yeah.
Wow, yeah. Man, good taste. Yeah, this was a engagement gift for my wife. So nice. I love it, and I just made my first few NATO straps for it recently. So yeah, you know, I talk about leather all the time, but watches was my first true high end love. And so for that reason, that's why I could justify so many boots. 'Cause it's like, oh, I used to buy watches that were Swiss watches that were vastly more expensive than these boots. So a $500 boot purchase never felt like a huge expenditure to me. Not that I have like tons of money or anything, but you know, a $500 expenditure is much more digestible than, you know, a $5,000 one. But anyways, I started researching different NATO straps, and I came across Shell Cordovan, and I started reading about it, and that's where I heard about Horween. This is before I ever owned any Alden shoes at all. And then I educated myself into Chrome XL. So I had to actually seek out these answers. This is kind of why I feel like Chrome XL is special, is because it wasn't something that I grew up learning in elementary school. I didn't learn about Horween Tannery, you know, from the mainstream media. I had to actually research and do my own process of discovery to come across you guys to begin with. And that when I landed on Chrome XL and I experienced it for the first time, it was such an awakening moment that, you know, it'll live on forever with me. And still, when I compare your Chrome XL to like Seidel's Double Shot, I have some here. It's different. And you mentioned this in a recent
tell podcast. Us about it. I don't have any experience with the Double Shot, and it's something that we talk about a lot.
Yeah, well, it's different. I could tell it's still chrome tan and it's still oily, but it doesn't have the Chrome XL smell to it. It has like a fresh, almost like more of a fresh carpet smell than an oily, sharp smell like that I'd characterize Chrome XL as.
What's the body when you put your hand on it? What's the body that the hand feel like compared to a Chrome XL?
It's a little bit more boardy, less what's the word? It's how do I want to explain it?
Does it snap it's back to your hand in a way that a lot of veg, like an oiled veg, kind of does? I don't know. Like Chrome XL to me has like this really beautiful feel in the hand where it sort of snaps back, but it's also sort of drapey at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Chrome XL is drapey. This stuff is. Yeah, it does snap back, but it's not as drapey as Chrome XL. It's not as oily, and I could also tell it's not as shrunken. I think Chrome XL is a lot more shrunken down. Chrome XL to me feels a lot more cooked, if that makes sense. And I don't know if you're cooking Chrome XL, but just
I'm gonna tee up Nick for this one because I think we've cued in on two hints to a process called hot stuffing. Nick, can you explain to Dale the smell that is imparted from the hot stuffing, and then perhaps that feel difference that he's experiencing? How that I'm imagining that's also from hot stuffing.
It comes from two places. Well, let's do the feel first because I think it's simpler. So the like that roundness or like the density, that's coming from sort of what you alluded to, the drying process and then the retannage. So the retannage is all veg, it's all tree barks, and there's nothing. That's it. So it's really traditional. So that does a lot to sort of fill in all of the gaps and the voids that are around the fibers. There's that, and then the drying method also, we air dry, which is kind of an insane thing to do as a tannery. It's based on like, we want to make things as big as possible. So air drying makes things much smaller. So we lose like 20% or 15% of the square footage just by the way we dry it. And that has the effect of, you know, sort of everything's, it's the same hide substance. It's just taking up less square feet. So everything shrinks back against itself, and then that creates all these different challenges that we then have to deal with, but it makes a better product in the end. So we just have to charge more for it because we're getting less square footage. But so that's one of the reasons that price goes up on that product. But so that's where the feel comes from, and that density and that roundness. And then the smell is, like Phil was saying, that's from the hot stuffing. So hot stuffing is conditioning with oils and greases and waxes that are solid at room temperature. So normally in the modern tanning world, in most places they'll do that with an emulsification. So they'll do it in the same drum as retanning. They'll retan it with whatever they're going to retan with, and then they put the oils and waxes in, and those are all emulsified with water, and it comes out basically of the washing machine and it's ready to be dried. Where ChromXL is, splitting that into two different parts. And the reason we do this is because we want to use those heavier, less refined, sort of more old world waxes and oils. And those are great because they're heavier and they impart, much better water resistance naturally. Not to say that there aren't modern, modern oils and additives that you can put in leather that don't do a better job, because there are, but that's sort of the traditional way to do it. And it also gives it that self-polishing sort of component, because there's so much oil in the leather that you can, if it scratches or dents, you can sort of work that back out pretty easily. So there's a lot going on. I think that one of the things that I didn't realize immediately, or maybe it took me longer to realize than it should have, was that ChromXL is really, we treat it and tan it like a veg tanned piece of leather, other than the first 24 hours. So the first 24 hours, it gets the chrome tannage, and then we just basically treat it like a veg. It gets the full veg retannage, it gets hot stuff, it gets air dried, it gets aniline fitted. So it's really, we're trying to sort of straddle the line between a veg looks and ages and smells great, but gives you the performance of...
It's literally in the name. It's...
Yeah.
The name of the leather. It's like a better chrome. I don't know. XL.
Right. Exactly.
But better's a tough word though. Like,
yeah.
Better for who and for what,
Yeah, no, it's not. It is definitely not good. It does not work everywhere. I mean, there are plenty of places that there are better options. For sure.
All right, let me tell you some of my criticisms. The things that I don't like about ChromXL, it's expensive. It is not scratch resistant at all. It will really scratch and dent. I've noticed a lot of veg leathers want to dent. And the stretchiness is a problem for a lot of applications that I have. How is the scratch resistance and stretch on the double shot you have there, Dale? Have you worked with that at all?
Oh, yeah. I made some bags out of it. I wish I had them handy. But yeah, they... I throw them on the ground. I throw them in my trunk. I drag them around on rocks. And yeah, they scratch up, but it's weird. It's also self-healing, I will say. I don't ever baby it. I don't condition it. I don't buff it out. I just kind of watch what happens to it. And literally, I'm kicking this stuff around.
If you roll your fingernail over the top of it really lightly, does it scratch it, or does it sort of glide over the top?
Yeah, you can, I don't know if you could see that. It makes an indent, but it doesn't really scratch it.
Cause that is a problem with ChromXL. I really dislike how easily it scratches. It's tough to have a store where you have your finished goods sitting on a shelf and people come pick it up and it just immediately scratches. I mean, you're like, we have to discount 20% for that. So it's pretty expensive leather for us to use for that reason.
Yeah. All right, I got some B-grade Kilties here. So here's natural ChromXL. I'm gonna scratch it. Here we go.
Kind of resilient. That's coming. Is it scratching up?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's
how does it feel different than the double shot? Out of curiosity.
ChromXL is more oily and it's more spongy. It's more stretchy. It's got more sort of spring back when I stretch it. Whereas this is more like, I can't stretch it because I feel like it's not been shrunken already. And then, yeah, if I try to scratch it with my fingernail, which, yeah, you could see a pretty good gouge in there. I could take my scratch all to it if you want.
No, that, like, you'll scratch anything with that. So here's the thing. Like, I was saying a negative for me is also happens to be a positive for comfort. So I don't love a stretchy leather for a wallet because people use it and the stretches to conform around the cards and then the cards just fall out. So I don't use it for that reason. But on last week we had Sam from Context on with the Roy boots. Man, those ChromXL boots are some of the most comfortable boots I have. And guess what? they're probably a size and a half too small for me, and they've just formed to my foot and they're so comfortable now. So I think the stretchiness that is achieved by air drying the leather, it is positive and negative. So I don't know. I think I want to summarize, is Chrome XL overrated, by saying like, it depends on what you're doing. So like, maybe it is and maybe it isn't. Like for me, it is and it isn't, honestly. Like I think it's overrated for a wallet, like I just said, but perhaps underrated for a boat shoe. Like I think it's by far the best thing for a boat shoe. I want Nick to, do you got any negatives with Chrome XL? It's expensive. What else, Nick?
It takes a long time to make. So like if you're
looseness? Looseness is a problem?
That can be a thing, but that can be a thing with any leather. But I think, I mean, it takes a long time to make, so it's expensive and you have to wait if you order it. I mean, it's not, we make everything to order. So
only earth tones? You can't get bright
earth
colors?
Earth tones only. Yep. You can't glue it, really. At least the original version, you can't really glue it. You can glue it temporarily so you can stitch through it, but you can't glue it as a general statement, you can't glue it as the only attachment method. I mean, it's for footwear. It does take a little bit of. Definitely you have to be more careful through the manufacturing process because you can dent
it
and scuff
really,
it. It's
really, really, really hard to work with. It's awful to skive because it's that stretchiness. It's like.
It's a learning curve thing. Awful. I think
it's very hard to work with.
Yeah, no, it's Cordovan is the same way. I mean, there's a lot of nuances to a lot of different things, but yeah, so it definitely, once you figure out how to work with it, I think it's fine, but there's definitely oftentimes, and this happens with many of our products, whenever we get into, if we have a new customer or an existing customer that switches to a new factory, there's always like the start is always pretty, I was gonna say rocky. It's not rocky, but there's just like there's a lot of concerned communication that goes back and forth because there's not a lot of stuff out in the world anymore that looks like our stuff. So people just aren't used to working with it as much anymore, and that's a good thing and a bad thing at the same time. So it's just a communication thing, then, and it's a commercialization thing, and that's normal. But that's just an indicator of one of the challenges as to, you know, when you work with it. But other than that, definitely. I mean, I think that a lot of the issues that leather has is that sort of is inherent to any more traditional leather. So it's hard to.
Well, one thing I'll say is on my bags, this anchor piece here that I normally glue this down, but on this particular piece, I did not even attempt it because I could tell there's no way that this wax flesh would glue to this olive predator. Adhesives just aren't going to apply here.
Did you rough it up before that?
No, all I did is I ran some rivets through it. And
if you,
and
you
set
could
this
glue,
piece in.
You could glue it. So if you take like a coarse sandpaper on that rough out wax flesh before you rivet it down, it's called roughing. So you want to open up those fibers again before you glue it on both sides. So you could do it on the green piece too. Did you try that? It wouldn't glue?
I normally do that. But just in this case, I said, you know what? I'm not even going to try to glue it because I'm already riveting it.
It will hold.
Okay. I'm sure it would. I said, you know what? I'm going to skip it here. I'm just going to rivet them down and I'm going to do the stitching and no glue necessary. Like no, I just didn't. I'm sure glue would work.
It holds it in place for stitching, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Guys, I'm going to row the ship into some treacherous territory. Further treacherous territory. We're going in the dark clouds. I want to talk about Alden pricing. Dale, you mentioned in our show notes here that...
Yes.
The price for Aldens rises every year. As most things, especially these days. And you noted like, hey, you know, Alden's getting expensive, but you know, Gucci's selling some sneakers for $1,400.
Exactly.
And why are people getting so mad at that? Not Alden. Is Alden overpriced? I would say I've seen some photos online. I don't have any direct experience with this, but some QC concerns from the factory recently over the last you know, since the pandemic. What's your take on Alden pricing and quality these days?
Well, when I started buying Alden, they were $500, and that was hard to swallow at the time. Now the standard Indy is about $700, and to me, I'm sorry, that's a no-go. $700 for that boot. I know I could go to Grantstone for $350, sub $400, and get the same, you know, if not better build. So there's just no way I would buy a $700 Indy today. That said, when, like you said, when I go and all I need to do is just take a 50,000 foot zoom out bird's eye view and go look at Gucci, go look at Salvatore Ferragamo, go look at Prada, go look at some of that stuff. Their sneakers, they're selling sneakers for $1,800, you know, sometimes more. It's ridiculous. These high end luxury brands that I used to, and I could get into the, you know, the illusion of the high end luxury brands. They get you right when you walk in, it's all clean, it's well lit. The store clerks are all well dressed, and it creates this environment that you feel like you want to belong to this culture or whatever they're selling. You know, oh, I want to be able to afford these products. I don't care what it costs. And just to feel like you could afford something from these stores, like, makes you feel like royalty in a way. And so that's a long-winded way of saying that, yeah, their sneakers, they're selling for $1,500, $2,000, but it's $80 worth of material. You know, it's nothing, it's nowhere near as special as something from Alden. And so as much as I would trash on Alden's prices today, all I need to do is go look at those Gucci sneakers and say, you know what? Alden is pretty reasonable, actually. They could be charging more because their product is objectively better at $700. You know, the Alden Indy at $700 in brown chrome XL is objectively better than a $1,500 Gucci sneaker that's made out of composites, rubbers, bond welted junk. You know, and they put it in a flashy box and it makes you think that it's worth it. But they don't actually educate the customer as to what goes into it.
Well, I think I want to jump in. I think that with those, the you know, the more mainstream, I guess, or in the high fashion brands, like you're paying for something that's not in the shoe. Like you're paying for that shopping experience, and you're paying for the name, and you're paying for the advertising, and you're paying for that, the feeling that you get when you, like you said, when you go into that, you get that, open that clean box. I mean, it's a completely different thing, where I think with something, you know, like Alden or anything in that, of that ilk, what you're paying for is the shoe. I mean, you're not, the markup that you're paying for is just the normal one that the store is going to charge to sell the shoe. There's no, I mean, they don't have an advertising budget, and they don't have, you know, they don't have, I mean,
you're talking about Alden right now.
Yeah. I'm talking about Alden. I mean, but, and there's a, you know, this applies to a lot of other brands, but you're not paying for a design team to design a new collection every year. I mean, they've got their staples.
I'd argue what you're paying for is distribution.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, I think that even if you just look at the cost component and like the percentage of labor and materials that are in the product versus the end product, I think that is the differentiation point, where you're getting more of your dollars are going into the physical product. The more dollars that you spend are in that physical product. And I think that's the main difference. And I don't think, I mean, I think that there are times that I don't own any Gucci, Prada, or Ferragamo, anything. But there is a time there. I mean, I can imagine times and places that those products are more appropriate than an Indy boot. So I mean, I'm not trashing them and saying that there's no place and people should stop buying them. But it's just a completely different product, and you should have different expectations of it.
I think on the flip side, that's the same with the other end of the spectrum. If you're comparing a Grantstone to an Alden, it's just different. And for my anecdote, if you guys care, did you care?
Yes.
I find the Alden stuff fits me much better. There's something about the True Balance and Berry Last that just work better for me. I actually have never been fully pleased with my Diesel boots, and I have a few. I have a brass boot, and I have some long wing tips from Grantstone. And I've played around with a couple different sizes, and they're not quite right for me. I feel like I'm not being held into my heel enough. So I think the last is something I would, again, like for me, I don't have a wall of boots like Dale, although I'm jealous. You know, I just want to find, I do have a wall of bass guitars, which is a more dangerous habit. Each of these basses have a function for me that do a certain thing. And that's how I view my footwear is they tend to have like a certain function. Oh, beautiful guitar.
I'm a tailor.
Oh, nice, man. Yeah, for me, like on the shoes though, like I really want to wear my things for a long time, and I'm much more interested in like the one ring to rule them all sort of thing, as opposed to having a wide breadth of different colors. And it's the same for my clothes and pants and stuff. Like I just want one. Like I don't like having a lot of things. So for me, I'd pay twice as much to have like a really precise fit that just works for me, which is ironic because I bought them too small. But having said that, I do like my Grant Stones. That's cool looking too, man. What is that?
I would say that I don't own many Vibergs. This is my third pair or fourth pair of Vibergs, but this is easily a boot I'd spend $1,400 again on. This is Shinky dark brown oiled horse butt on the 2040 last. And the fit is just perfect. And it's a T-core leather. You can see how it's T-coring, patinating out. And you're right. Like for those really, really special builds, it's okay to spend like a lot of money on them. But to fill a wall out with boots. Yeah. It's another discussion altogether. A lot of this was actually hand-me-downs. These were sent to me by my buddy Mario. These are Oliva Badalassi Willie's boots. A lot of this stuff I didn't buy myself.
Dale, so. don't get me wrong here, please. I started a whole business buying many hundreds of thousands of dollars of leather just to look at it. And I just sit there and look at it at my shop. So mine is way less healthy than yours. And like you can actually wear yours. Mine are just sitting there in sheets.
Oh, trust me. I wear each of these once a year.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like I think this is also... This whole podcast should just be called like, hey, whatever, it's subjective, I don't know. Like for every episode.
It's kind of true though. I mean, you can't. I think that when you start to, I mean, I think that if I were to sit over here and just say like, you should Chrome Excel, just buy it. That's it. That's all you need. Just buy that. Like, just don't even buy it. Waste your time on anything else ever. That's just not.
Nick Strideby's kind of nailed it. He's like, it's a really good entry point for people that are trying to get into this. It's like, fair.
Yeah, it's widely enough. I mean, sort of going back, it's widely enough distributed at a wide enough range of price points that you can sort of dial into whatever you want. And I think that at least when you're buying something, like if you know it's Chrome XL, you're like, well, I don't really have to worry about the leather. Like I think I know the leather's pretty solid. So then I can start to think about like, well, how does the fit, what's the fit like and what's the pattern like and do I like the style and like all, and who made it and where it's made. So you can sort of free up a little bit of bandwidth to think about other stuff, which is
okay. Let's do the vote. Alden overpriced, yes or no? I'm gonna say no. Dale says yes.
I'm gonna say no. Because I've been to the factory and I know the people and I know that it's not. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Okay. I'll say this. If Grant Stone didn't exist, then no, Alden's not overpriced. But since I know that Grant Stone's my option, my core option, which I'm friends with Wyatt, I love the Grant Stone team. They're all just amazing people. Because Grant Stone exists, I will say Alden currently is not worth it to me in most cases. That said, I just bought some Aldens from Matt of Aldwine Raleigh. I still shop for Alden. You know, some of my favorite boots, like you said, Phil, I'm so glad that you're a fan of the Roy boot, because this is one of my first true boot loves right here. The Roy boot in reverse tobacco chamois. Still have them.
Did you check out the episode with the creator last week with Sam?
Yes.
How great is Sam, by the way?
Man, what a hero. I was like fangirling out the whole time. You have no idea. Like, because this is the pair, like I bought these in like 2015 and these have lived with me for the past almost 10 years. And I think about them all the time. It's weird, but you know, it's truly like the, and like you said, the pictures that they had on their website were such, they were just art. They were Picasso. They were high res.
Isn't that funny? Like every, angles. Like you and I and 100,000 other dudes saw that picture and had the same reaction, right? All right. Hey, I'm going to shift us again to safer waters. Let's talk about some World War II era boots. Dale, you mentioned these Eastman Rider and Tinker boots.
Yes.
How cool are those? You said you picked up some, right?
They're super cool. So I don't normally shop at Standard and Strange, but they had these tanker boots. They did a 20% off sale. So they're normally $1,400. I think I got them for $1,000. So I got these. I was reading about the history. Not to mention the Raider boots as well. I did a whole video on the Raider boots. My buddy Mario sent me his Raider boots. These ones right here. In walnut horsehide, and I did a big video, big historical deep dive on them. And when I saw that they were on sale, I think 25% off or 20% off, regardless, I just said, you know what? My grandpa fought in World War II. I just have this like sort of inherent bond and fascination with World War II, which a lot of us do, which by the way, Horween,
middle-aged white male hobby. I don't know, like every white guy that's 40 does.
Exactly.
So what's the story with those? Are they actual legitimate like patterns from the World War II era?
Yeah, they're recreations. And basically this Eastman brand, I think John Lofgren makes these. So it's not like Eastman has their own factory. I think they do this line through John Lofgren. And so you might recognize some of the workmanship there. And these are recreation boots, and they were worn by the Marine Raiders of World War II. And there's only like two pictures of Marine Raiders wearing these exact boots. But when you see the pictures, it's like, okay, yeah, those are interesting and interesting enough to own. And I just said, you know what, because of my heritage with World War II and the U.S. Army and all this, I said, I'm gonna get these because of, again, my familial link, my growing up with them. And then just today, it's so funny. And I texted you this. Okay, there's a couple things I want to hit on. So I Googled tanker boots, and this website, BB Militaria, came up. And they have these tanker boots in a size 8.5, my size, from World War II. Authentic.
Yeah.
So how much are they? $200. I said, this isn't the stars aligning. This is like galaxies aligning. And so I said, those are mine. I immediately went and bought those. I can't wait to do the videos on them. But then, Nick, I want to get your reaction on this. I came across this. This is called a Sam Brown belt from World War II. The officers wore these Sam Brown belts. And this is also an original. This is from World War II. This isn't a recreation. And looks so check this out. Yeah, it looks brand new, right? It looks almost awesome. Plastic. What's that say?
Genuine shell cordovan. Tough to see, but definitely says cordovan.
Genuine shell cordovan. Guess what the price was on this?
$18.
$19. Sorry, $90. $90.
Oh, $90. Yeah, that's cool.
So I can't wait to do videos on these. Get the, because at this point, it's not a matter of me reviewing products. It's a matter of historical documentation for posterity. And I just feel like it's my duty, almost my patriotic duty, to review these products, because these lived during the war, you know, back then. And you guys were making leather for, you know, you were using Chrome XL as engine seals in airplanes, I believe, something to that effect.
All sorts of stuff. Chrome XL was in tanks and service trucks and airplanes and all that stuff.
That's right.
It's not really. It has like a. It shares a lot of the Chrome XL approach, but it's not. It's actually not exactly Chrome XL. It's sort of like a offshoot of it. But yeah, I mean, for the sake of the conversation, yeah, it's not quite as oily. Because when they make the oil seals, they actually take the oil out of it and then like re-rubberize it. It's kind of a wild process, but yeah, it's cool. It's super cool. But those I hadn't seen that officers or that belt that's stamped like that before. That's interesting.
Sam Brown. Yeah. Absolutely fascinating. When I saw that and I saw it for $90, I said, this poor guy doesn't know what he has. He doesn't understand what Shell Cordovan is. Like he just resells militaria, you know, old military uniforms, helmets, old cartridges, you know, weapons, swords, knives.
I wonder if we made it or somebody else did. I don't know how much Cordovan we were making during that time. Because some of the notes that I found, like we like switched basically all. Yeah, that's cool. We switched a lot of our capacity over to be able to do what we were doing.
So okay.
I'd have to go back and look. I'm sure there was still some, but I have to go back and look. Because it does look like the Cordovan of the era, which is has more of like a pigmented, like more even finish for like leather goods like that. Yeah.
It's almost like the war effort for World War II in the leather and United States as a whole. It was almost like as impactful as the Industrial Revolution that happened, you know, 60 years before, because it just blew up the United States as a manufacturer for war making.
For everything.
Everything. Yeah. And then you became this industrial powerhouse through the 50s. That's interesting because I didn't know that. And Nick was telling me in those old documents you found that there was so much demand for chrome sulfur boots that they had to teach other tanneries that were not Horween tanneries to make chrome sulfur, which is incredible. That's just thinking about how much leather and how many shoes. And it's sometimes I think about that and it's a little bit sad because who used to be this manufacturing powerhouse and it's kind of like not so much anymore. And I don't know, it bumps me out a little bit, but things change. The one that gets me the most is still Maine. I get sad about thinking about
the Northeast in general.
Poor little Maine that you made so many shoes that people loved, and now they don't so much.
Yeah, Turner Manufacturing, which was in Massachusetts, I mean, they were the biggest manufacturer of tanning equipment in the world at one point, and now they're way gone.
It happens.
It does.
Well, I want to shout out Phil from our first podcast that we did together. He talked to me about the Marine Field shoe. Phil, do these look familiar to you?
Are those the Oak Street ones? Yes, they do.
Oak Street. Yeah. Natural Chrome XL rough out. They were on sale and I picked them up.
Give us a shot of the inside of the tongue or behind the tongue there. Because people don't really realize what that rough out is, but it's literally the chrome XL flip backwards. So it's the grain side all throughout the inside of the boot. Is there just very minimal or no liner on that boot?
Yeah, no lining.
It looks like you haven't worn it, but I bet that thing is super comfortable.
I have not worn these yet. I'm still waiting to review these. I've had them probably 8 months, but there you go. Horween.
If they fit you, I can almost guarantee you those are going to... what's the outsole?
It's a Vibram, looks like a Neocort V-bar sort of thing.
It could do the job. That might be your most comfortable pair if it fits right.
Maybe. Yeah. This is definitely my right size. Definitely nice and wide. So
Oak Street also fits me really well. I don't know what they're doing with their last, but that really works too for me. I have like a duck. So anybody hearing this, me criticizing Grant Stone's last, you should realize I have like a really odd like duck shaped foot, like a bizarre clown person. Dale, watching you talk about the stuff you found online kind of leads me into the next topic here, but your love for the stuff is infectious. And I feel like listening to you that I feel so out of touch with what's going on in the boot world, but be really curious to hear, because like Nick and I were talking about this earlier today. Nick and I, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, but I feel like I'm stuck in the boot world from 10 years ago, like Roy Boot era, right? I feel like my perspective has never really shifted away from that world. And that's when raw denim was really hip and you know, Alden was great at the time. People loved Alden and now it seems like that's slipping away. I'm wondering if you can give me a sense of like what people that are really into this are into these days in the way that you and I were both into that Roy boot when it came out years ago.
No, I think I'm still stuck in that era with you. I don't think I've left. I've pretended to leave it by like experimenting with some of these Indonesian brands, and they do absolutely phenomenal work. I love it. You know, it's like that same concept, you know, you deploy somewhere and you find a local tailor and he'll custom make your suits for you out of whatever fabric that you pick. And it's wonderful. But I'm still stuck in that, like, sort of that childlike awe that I had back when I started buying Alden. That's never left me. I'm still just really enamored with my Bybergs and Brown Chrome XL. Like, this is probably the fifth pair of boots that I ever bought, high-end boots. And I'm still in love with these. I still, like, cherish these. So, you know, I'm still there. I've never really left it.
Totally surprised me by that answer. But I'm glad. I guess I'm glad to hear it. It makes me not feel like an idiot. The other thing Nick and I were talking about is being influenced by certain things these days. Nick, can you just, I don't want to just like tell people what you said, but can you just tell me again how you find things that you like?
Phil and I were talking earlier and about sort of new products and how we feel about new products and if or when we find new products. And I was saying that as I have advanced in my years, that like I think this happens to a lot of people, maybe less adventurous. And I've identified like brands and sort of cuts that I like. And then I sort of trust those brands to sort of like lead me through whatever's happening out in the world. So I guess, I mean, so like they've been on the podcast before, but like the 316 guys, like I know, like they have a bunch of different cuts and like, I know what fits me there. And if they have something that's new, I can say like, well, how does it fit compared to this? And, you know, they're sort of on the edge, or not like the leading edge, but they stay current enough that sort of the cuts of things change. So I guess I'm reliant upon them to keep me not like wearing skinny jeans anymore. Like, for an example, like
I'm wearing them right now, man.
Yeah,
they're great. My wife loves
them. So I think that and when I first like started to get into like all the raw denim, and when I was building like my boot collection and clothes and jackets and whatever, I was interested and willing to try a bunch of different manufacturers. Like, I wonder what the, you know, for denim, like I want, you know, like Japan Blue or Momotaro or Shaco. Like I would be like, I want to try each one of those, and I'll try like a few pairs from each one, and then I'll see, and maybe I'll keep two of the pairs and I'll wear them and I'll see how they fade differently or how they fit differently. And like, I just have no interest in doing that anymore. I just like, I've got to go back to 316, like I know they've got a couple of different cuts, and if I want something more relaxed, I can go with that cut, and they come out with different, like they'll put some different, you know, fabric denim types in there every once in a while. So I've got that option, but like, I'm not exploring as much. So I think that's like maybe has the effect of giving me like more of like a uniform, because I just like doesn't, I sort of like have all like the same stuff, but I think that that's what Phil's talking about, where we're sort of stuck, or I guess that's how I'm stuck in that way. Like I'm not always looking at what's totally new.
I also think the argument I was presenting to you earlier, Nick, was that it feels to me like you're finding out about things through curation of a brand or like an entity, like a store, like a context type of thing. And I can pick on them because they don't exist, sadly. Where I think the internet, as it has evolved and, you know, matured a significant amount since the Roy boot happened, you know, now people are finding out about products through individuals. There's something called, I'm not on TikTok. I probably ought to at least see what's going on there so I can be more informed. But there's something called a TikTok shop now, where Phil can get on there and pitch a Roy boot and say like, guys, this boot's the best boot, buy this boot. And then they buy it, and me, Phil, selling that boot, I get a kickback for repping a brand in that way. So it's like very much individual selling to individuals now. It's interesting to think about how like media has changed so much, where it used to be like there's a whole news company that just makes news programs. And now they're like kind of irrelevant. And it's just like guy telling you about leather. Like you're niched down into this thing on a YouTube channel. And it's just one dude to you.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually how I find
things. There's many people watching CNN as this right now.
Yeah. I mean, we'll probably get 2,000 people checking this out. So you're right. We are not the example in that. But, you know, Roseanville's probably getting more views than CNN right now.
Oh, literally. Yeah. I don't know who watches CNN. Well, I know who watches CNN.
But I would, like, large... It's a whole company. There's, like, hundreds of people that work there, and you're talking about one guy with, like, an editor that has as much penetration into the market. So, anyways, that's my argument to you, Nick, is it feels like the things that have shifted around you, and you're just not keyed in on like individuals on social media, perhaps.
No, I see it. And there are plenty of, I'm too skeptical, I guess. Cause I know about what you're talking about. I'm like, well, what are they like? They take a picture and they're holding up. Like, it's like Wayne's World.
It's the suck cut.
Pepsi.
Oh yeah.
Or like he's got dumps out that like Advil in his hand. He's just like, it's just like,
it's so good.
Sometimes it feels like a little, I've totally aged myself with that reference, but
no, it's good though.
Go watch the first Wayne's World. If you don't know what I'm talking about, maybe you'll figure it out. But,
this brings up the disconnectedness of our media world today, and the influencer world. I just came across 10 accounts today that have 3 million followers. They're like all ASMR accounts, which I hate ASMR. I think it's really stupid. But like some of these girls that do ASMR, they have 3 million followers, 5 million followers, and I've just never heard of them. You know, it's really bizarre. But the media has become so decentralized, and that's what I think we're kind of talking about. And you know, some of my friends say we are the news now because, yeah, like you're saying, Phil, it comes down, you know, any individual now can have a voice, a much louder voice than ever before. You know, before it used to come down to, you know, just a few different powers that had pulled the levers of information control. But now it's like, no, guess what? Any of us could create a YouTube channel at any time. And, you know, and part of the downfall is really quality content, in my opinion, like this podcast. This is like my favorite podcast. You guys talking about leather.
Say more.
I nerd out on it. Whenever a new podcast of yours drops, I just put it on my car.
I'm joking. Don't say anymore.
I absolutely love this podcast. Like I'm such a fanboy, and you know, but it just goes to show, like, you know, anybody can have a voice now. Truly. And it's really that simple. And the big voices have been decentralized into other ones. And like I said, go on YouTube and just start looking up ASMR accounts, you know, or go look up anything. I don't know, construction. You'll find people with hundreds of thousands of followers you've never heard of, millions of followers you've never heard of. And they build up cultures around them and fan bases around them. It's amazing. And, you know, my corner of the internet, tiny, you know, it's tiny, but I'm thankful that there's, you know, a small chunk of the population interested enough in leather to nerd out with me. And, you know, like I said before, I'm a huge fan of your podcast. You're where I get most of my leather knowledge, you know, my deep philosophical leather knowledge.
There is such a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and there is, believe me.
It's really funny that you put it that way. Cause you're right. Like we don't really approach it. Like, I think I'll clickbait title something like, this is the best, or this is overrated. But like, when we start talking about it, it's all gray, like we were talking about earlier. But let me ask you this, Dale, where do you find out about clothing, footwear, things that you're, how'd you find that belt, for example?
Which belt?
The Cordovan officer's belt. What was it called?
Sam Brown belt. Yes. And that was used, I believe, by equestrian officers. No, it was developed by Sam Brown, who lost an arm and needed a remedy to be able to still access his sword. So I think his left arm got chopped off and he needed an apparatus to be able to access his sword from while riding on a horse.
How did you find that website?
I just Googled. So I had bought those tanker boots from Standard and Strange. And then I Googled tanker boots and I found this BB Militaria website. They just sell all old World War II, World War I Militaria. You know, the uniforms, the gear, all of it. All of it. In fact, I bought this stuff too. I threw this on. Can of World War II shoe impregnate. Have you ever heard of that?
Man, it's like the dubbin almost.
That looks like it's very flammable.
Yeah.
Like you cook over that can.
I'm gonna test that.
Maybe it's like a sterno or something.
No, I don't know. It just looks like it just looks. That's funny. I want to talk about. So this guy lost his arm, and instead of being like, "Well, I guess my riding days are over," like, making me a different kind of belt. I need a different way to get my sword out. But that doesn't say. If that doesn't show that people have changed, I don't know. I don't know what does.
Are you calling me soft, Nick?
Yeah.
I'm calling us all soft. Yeah.
We're all soft compared to that guy.
Definitely.
Sam Brown.
I'm going to tell you where I find about stuff since I'm asking all the questions. I'm going to ask myself one. I find it on YouTube, man. I find it at Dale's Leatherworks channel. And
thank you.
The Brothers in Boots podcast? You know what's funny? Those guys don't have a lot of people that watch, but I watch it. Shout out to those guys. I find a lot. Yeah. I think I'm a dork for YouTube just because I make YouTube videos and I realize how I guess I like that direct connection with an individual. And then there's been in the past, I think like Goodyear Welts is a really cool place on Reddit to check out. I like the Discord Stitchdown stuff. Their podcast is great. You know what? I don't do any Instagram. Is there some good Instagram channel that I should follow?
So many. You spoke about Brothers in Boots, but my one buddy, Chris, he just started the Boot Wiki, which... it's criminal how underfollowed he is at this point. He just started it, but he gets about 5 likes per post. And I repost all of his posts just to try to, you know, help get some following there. But he's doing historical like knowledge posts on, you know, the old world knowledge of shoemaking. We're talking about the first time Goodyear Welting, you know, way before that was Blake Welting, way before Veg tan was like this other sort of tanning. And you guys talked about brain tanning before. He introduces all these really cool, like factoids that I didn't know that I should know if I'm running a channel about boots and leather. But yeah, the Boot Wiki, absolutely 100% the one that we should all follow right now.
Love it. All right, Dale, lightning round time. You got a bunch of questions for Nick. Let's go.
Yes, I do. Nick, is there sugar in Chrome Excel?
There is no sugar in Chrome Excel.
Nick, did you know that my vanity license plate on my car is Chrome Excel?
I did know that. And that's...
I think I texted you that photo.
You did. I was like, oh, man. That's awesome.
How do you feel about that, Nick?
I feel great, and I promise I won't send you a cease and desist.
Nick's going to get a license plate that says Dale on it.
Yeah,
and we'll send you that picture.
I'd be so honored. Let's see. Okay. Is there liquor in Chrome Excel?
Kind of. I mean, we call the tree bark blends that we cook and make, we call those liquors, but there's no liquor in it. We're sort of like steeping the concept is fine. We're steeping the leather in the liquors. And so the tree barks come out of that liquid and go into the leather, for the lack of a better description.
Okay. That's a good answer. With the ever increasing cost of living in Chicago, would you ever consider moving the tannery to an area that is easier to find and retain staff?
No, I think that, I mean, it's a conversation that you like sort of have with yourself from time to time, because it can be hard to find people, but our stuff is handmade. I mean, so we need the people that we have now are so important that to pick up and move, we wouldn't be able to make the product that we make if we didn't have the people that we have now. And there's also the water in Chicago is part of the process input. And there are stories about tanneries moving from one place to another and not being able to make their own leather because the water is different.
Interesting.
So there's some, you know, in the weather, even though the weather in Chicago is insane, we've sort of built the seasonal component into the process. So it's the one thing that we know. That we sort of know is like what the water does, and we know that the seasons are going to change, so we can sort of account for those. But yeah, no, we haven't really given any kind of involved thought on that, because you sort of ask the question and then you get halfway through the answer and you're like, yeah, we can just move on to something else because we're not going anywhere.
In your opinion, I'm working on two bags. This olive predator and Horween natural wax flesh, is that a good combination?
Yeah, I like it.
Cool. You like the way that the earthy tones match up?
Yeah, I do. And the natural will get like nappier and the predator will darken up. I think it'll be the contrast will be good. Yeah,
absolutely. Nice. In the Roseanville Indie Alden Indie video, he talked about how the Alden Austin leather on the 405 has like a blue core. And I noticed when I cut into this predator, it is rich blue core all throughout. But I came to understand that's just chromium salts, right? That doesn't indicate a cheap leather at all.
It doesn't. There's a perception of like a leather being more premium if the dye goes all the way through. But I mean, if we were to tan that leather and we could leave it in the retanning drum longer and make it go green all the way through, and that might actually be worse for the leather, because it's kind of a violent process where it's like a washing machine, so you're tumbling it against itself. So if we were to run it longer to make it green all the way through, that might actually end up being a less desirable product in that category. I mean, there are some of the different tree bark blends and different dyes, they have different characteristics in terms of how they penetrate and what they do to the color, but yeah, I would say that, I mean, just because it has a blue, what we call a blue streak, which is just because the chrome base is like a baby blue color, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a low quality.
It doesn't really indicate anything.
No.
Just that it means that dyes haven't penetrated through or some other material hasn't penetrated through.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
Final question. If I showed up at Horween tomorrow without announcing myself, could I apprentice for 3 months for free and learn all the tricks of the trade? Not all the good
tricks of the trade,
but could I just like work there and like watch what happens?
In some places, sure.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean,
low-key my dream.
No, there's definitely some spots that could be interesting. I mean, I think that some of the jobs I think take longer than that to get good at. Like we could put you on, I don't know, like shaving cordovan. Like in, I think 3 months you'd be okay at it, but you wouldn't be doing it as fast as you'd want to be doing it. And so
I could put Dale into a job that he would want to quit in a day, let alone 3 months.
We have a couple of those too. They pay well though.
Well, he's doing it for free, so.
Oh yeah,
we'll
get. Is it the one where I lift up like the 800-pound wet cow side and like dump it into the vat?
It's one of them.
Some of that, but it's that, but it's in August.
Okay. 120 degrees.
Yeah, it's hard. Hey, it is hard. The guys work super hard. It's
Nick, not easy stuff. Matt from your color and retan department stopped by my workshop today, and we were talking about. Because I'd worked retan. This is how I know Dale would quit in a day.
2 days.
I worked half the job. So they normally run 2 or 3 mills each day. I ran 1 mill 2 days in a row. And that was enough for me. It's like, this is a tough ass job. And it was not, actually it was pretty hot and humid in that time. But you know, honestly, when you start work at 2-3 in the morning, because you kind of have to for the flow of production to continue through the day. It's not. The temperature is not as bad as it could be, but it's still pretty hot and humid. And then these waterlogged heavy sides, you're swinging them, your hands are torqued. It's like, it's tough. So props to Matt, who I met today for the first time working at Horween in the basement.
Big props. Yeah. It's tough. Wow. Yeah, we can't do that.
All the guys working there.
Yep. Amazing. Well,
you got more questions?
I would love to come visit you guys one day in person.
You should, man.
Yeah, I would just love it. I mean, I would just, it would just be the most amazing thing. And truly, I don't want to just walk through the factory. I want to get my hands dirty. I want to pick up the hides. I want to cut a shell out of a horse butt. You know, I want to actually do some labor. Dang it. You know, I want to feel what it feels like. Because that's my fascination. That's why I started leatherwork to begin with. It was, I'm sick of just wearing stuff and using it. I want to actually know what it feels like to make it. And so truly, like on a very organic level, I would just love to come there and just, you know, experience what it's like to work at a tannery. I think that would just
be, check it out.
So cool. Yep. Yeah.
People absolutely. Are always asking, like, well, why don't you do any cutting and sewing? Like, why don't you make any products? And then, like, they come for a tour and they're like, oh, I see why you don't.
It's like, enough.
This seems complicated enough. Yeah.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
Can I lead off favorites today, Dale? Do you mind?
Let's go for
and
it.
While I do it, we'll give Nick his.
I'm surprised every time.
It's like ritualistic opportunity to think it's about
ridiculous.
A favorite. Well, so here I'm gonna do a double move and blow your mind here twice by combining two favorites in one, Nick. Today is, what is it, April 8th, and we had the eclipse come through. It was like 90-something% full eclipse in Chicago today, which is amazing. Honestly, I don't think I've experienced one like that before. And the thing that surprised me the most about it was how cold it got for a brief moment of time. Very, very interesting. That was the coolest part. But the tie into another thing is the Three Body Problem on Netflix is a TV show based on a book. And there are some themes. This is not a spoiler for the book, nor is it a spoiler for the show, but there are some things that also happen in the sky in the Three Body Problem. I would say I enjoyed the book more than I have this first season of the show. The first season of the show is all of book one and then some of book two. And it's really where the story starts to get interesting, is like the last episode of season one. So I'd say if you are interested in hard sci-fi, pretty interesting concepts, and you have some patience, check out Three Body Problem on Netflix, and better yet, just read the books. I am actually not done reading the books. I'm like halfway through book two. But I love sci-fi because I'm a nerd and I recommend it. What do you got, Dale? Any favorites? Things chilling you out these days?
Favorites? Well, low-key, I'm a UFO nut. I'm like deep into the UFO stuff. So, I don't know. Go check out Skinwalker Ranch on Amazon Prime. Go watch I know it's cliche, but go watch Ancient Aliens.
Yeah.
But aside from that note, you know, all jokes aside, I used to scoff at the UFO phenomenon. I used to think it was just a bunch of West Virginia backwoods, you know, farmers looking for attention. But in the last, you know, 5 or so years, it's really actually grown to a level of recognition that I think that, you know, we all need to be looking at it a little bit more seriously. I think there's a lot more mystery there than there is smoke. You know what I mean? And so I get one of the constant comments I get on my YouTube channel is when I hint at it, do a UFO video. Well, personally, I've never seen a UFO, but the evidence that I've seen is really quite compelling. And so I would encourage anybody who's just casually listening to this, you know, reconsider UFOs. I don't know that they're 100% just.
What's the
smoking.
Most compelling evidence you got? I want to hear it. I'm open, man. Like, I'm open to it. I've just have not seen anything where I'm like, yep, that's dead to rights. 100% an alien. You know, I've never.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And that's a problem, right? Okay. So there were some Navy patents. There was some technologies filed with the patent office through the Navy a few years ago, and you can find this online. And they detail out advanced propulsion technologies, anti-gravitational wave generators, things like this that Bob Lazar, you know, the guy that talked about Area 51, he talked about all these technologies, and the Department of the Navy literally filed patents with the patent office with this technology about 4 years ago. It's patented. It exists. Like, you know, the stuff that you see in the sky, the technology that Bob Lazar was describing is literally filed publicly with the patent office right now. That to me was the smoking gun. Like, okay, there's more than meets the eye with some of this stuff.
Have you seen or read Three Body Problem?
I started it. I only watched one episode.
I think you'd be interested. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but after you watch it, we should talk again, because it kind of reminds me of this same. That's why that book and show are interesting, is it's kind of what you just described with Lazar and the patents.
Yeah.
And it's kind of similar.
I'll be fully honest. I think Lazar is, you know, I think he's worth looking at. I know a lot of people have, quote, debunked him, but I'm rebunking him right now. I don't think he's just so easily dismissed.
Rebunked.
Rebunked. Bob Lazar rebunked.
Did we give you enough time, Nick?
I think I got one.
All right. Hell yeah. What do you got?
The eclipse today, this is not a favorite, but I was just thinking, like, you know, it was, I did not realize how creepy it is.
Yeah.
To be like the middle of the day and like then it's like dark. And then I was thinking about like all of the babies that were born and like the 1200s that were considered like whatever, because they were born under the eclipse. And I was like, yeah, it all makes sense now. But that's a good tie-in. I've got the first round of the first like the proof of the Horween Leather metal t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I don't have it with next to me.
You know what? Speaking of metal, I forgot to drop the Fallujah note. So now that we've done that, Nick, you can continue.
No, I just, so that t-shirt, I thought it was going to be pretty metal, and it is pretty metal. It's going to be, there aren't going to be very many. I'm not going to make very many of them, but I've got some other like Horween shirts that are coming too. So I'm excited about that.
Oh, nice.
Those are always fun to do.
You know what? I this is the legitimate not joke. I actually have another favorite. I have a third favorite other than Fallujah, which is the fourth favorite. The third favorite, I was thinking about this beforehand, Nick. I think my favorite, I'm going to take back my Three Body Problem in the eclipse. And this is the new favorite. It's your wife. And I will say
my
this.
My wife?
Yeah. And here's why. Okay. You know, people may have noticed that we've been on a nice schedule here of like a weekly cadence, and it's 100% credit to her, because you guys, I know, are going through some turbulent, like non-work things in life right now, and she's the one that pushed you to do this. So props to Mrs. Horween.
Yeah. She knows we enjoy it, and it's it's fun, and it's fun to get out there and talk to people and answer questions, and yeah,
talk to Dale. Yeah,
no, she does a lot for me that way. She pushes me in the right ways for sure.
Lauren's a favorite. I nailed it.
Yes,
Lauren, you can buy me dinner.
She's my favorite every week. So,
oh nice. Well, hey Dale, thanks for being on the show today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks,
man. I really appreciate you. And everybody, check out Dale's channel, Dale Leatherworks. Is that the full name of the YouTube channel? Please help me.
Yeah, Dale's Leatherworks, and I can't thank enough, Phil. Like, seriously, you know, I'm a fan of yours, truly. I love your podcast, Nick. I love your product. I love your heritage. I love everything you guys both bring to the table, and I've just been fangirling out tonight. So, can't believe I'm in front of you guys.
Oh, dude, we gotta get you to change your name to Sweetheart Dale's Leather Goods.
Yeah, we'll stay in touch.
I just
absolutely
put, just emboss hearts on everything, and you know, send them out with little kisses.
Yeah, because you know, like I said, you know, Horween, I think, made something truly American, and it makes me feel good about being an American at my core.
Oh,
wow. I'll leave it at that, you know.